Hey, this is Jamie White, and you're listening to Walking the Floor with Chris Shiflett.
I'm walking the floor over you.
Walking the floor.
I'm walking the floor.
Walking the floor over you.
Hola, senores and senoritas. This is Chris Shiflett. And you are listening to another fine edition of Walking the Floor. Coming to you live from Hollywood, California today. That's right. It's Friday afternoon. I'm sitting in a rehearsal studio. And you know what? In the room next door, I swear to God, is Depeche Mode. And across the hall is Kiss. Ba-bam! Dreams do come true, America. Come on. It's fucking weird, right? And here I am sitting in a room by myself recording this little thing on my phone because I don't have all my gear with me. But who cares about that? I got a fine show for you today. I got Jamie Wyatt here today to talk to us about her great record, Felony Blues, and all sorts of other stuff. What is going on? This is the end of the first week of my record, West Coast Town, being out there available for you. I hope you checked it out. I hope you dig it. And we played an in-store last weekend at Side One Dummy. Got an in-store tomorrow. By the time you hear this, I will have already played an in-store down in Long Beach at Fingerprints for Record Store Day. Even though we don't have any vinyl. But, you know, hey, no big whoop. We're going to do it anyway. That's about all that's going on in the short term. We got Bottle Rock coming up at the end of May, and then I might have a big announcement. Maybe by next week, I'll have an announcement for a couple more shows in a foreign country. But I can't say anymore. But we'll see. Fingers crossed. I can't say it yet, but I'm pretty sure. Might do a couple little acoustic solo shows elsewhere. So stay tuned for that. Okay. In the meantime, let's talk about Zounds.com. You know Zounds.com makes gear affordable. You know you can use your existing credit card and that they never charge interest. And they make it easier than ever to afford the gear you want. You know these things. You know that Zounds is run by real musicians. So get on over there. They provide fast two-day shipping for free on almost 90% of all products. So, you know, check it out. Zounds.com. Let's get to the interview. Okay, last week I had the pleasure of sitting down and talking to singer-songwriter Jamie Wyatt, core member of the Los Angeles Americana scene, man. We talked about that. She's got a great record out. Just came out a couple months ago called Felony Blues. Very interesting lady and wonderful songwriter. And, you know, one of the most interesting things, I think, about Jamie Wyatt. I mean, there's things that we talked about in this, you know. You probably know, you know, she did a little stretch in jail a few years back. That's like kind of a press point around the release of this record. But one of the things that I find most interesting about Jamie Wyatt is that her great-grandparents were country musicians in Bakersfield. So Jamie Wyatt's got a direct bloodline connection to the Bakersfield sound, which I think is amazing. As a matter of fact, we kind of started our conversation right there. This is Jamie Wyatt on Walking the Floor.
I can hear the mission bell. I'm wishing on, wishing well.
I always encourage it, but I don't, you know. Sometimes people are like, fuck off, it's 9 in the morning. I'm not doing that.
Right. Well, and I'm not a morning person, so I will. But
I have become a morning person in my old age. I was very much
not. Do you have children?
I do have children. That's I have lots
why.
Of children.
How many?
I have three boys.
All boys?
Yeah, yeah.
You're lucky.
Yeah. Did you just, you have kids too?
No,
oh,
I don't.
Okay.
Oh,
I'm
no,
sorry. I thought you just said so do I.
No, I have dogs.
Oh, well, there you go. That's your starting point. For us, we got two cats because we're like, we got to like have some kind of like, you know, attempt at taking care of somebody that isn't us, you know.
Right.
And then that sort of led into
yeah, it
our
started
suburban
with
life now, yeah.
It started with succulents. It started with plants.
There you go.
And then you were allowed to take care of those.
Yeah. And
if
those didn't die.
And then animals.
Yeah.
Then humans.
There you go. There you're on your way. So first, I kind of want to start. I read something. I was just like doing a little research on you.
Oh,
and
really?
I read that that you had, like, your great grandparents played country music in Bakersfield. Is that true?
Damn straight.
So you have like a direct connection to the Bakersfield sound?
Yes. And, wow. And I recently discovered
do tell.
It. Well, I mean, it started out, my mother used to always sing country and always talked with like a drawl. And I grew up in Washington.
Washington State?
Yeah, Washington State. Yeah, so everybody's like, I have the weirdest accent there is. It's like, because my Nana and my Papa lived very close to us.
Mm.
And they're from Texas and Oklahoma.
Mm.
So then my mom, upon some research, like she always said, oh, you know, your grandparents, they played music. And,
right.
And Uncle Don was a champion fiddle player. But
wait, whoa. You're not talking about Don Rich,
no.
Are you?
No. I'm not okay, from that
cause,
pedigree.
Because well, there's a lot of connections there. Because Don Rich was from Washington State, was a fiddle player. When Buck Owens discovered him, and then so the story goes, Buck taught him how to play guitar and brought him down to Bakersfield.
Well, there is.
I think you ought to work that into your bio.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you should just start claiming.
Who knows? It's like there ain't no fact checked anymore. Yeah. So it's like.
So when like in what years would your great grandparents have been active?
So there? They came over in the Dust Bowl.
Okay.
And settled in San Fernando Valley and Bakersfield.
Right.
And so I'm guessing, you know, I don't know for certain, but I'm pretty sure it's been in the 40s.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. My great grandfather, they were farmers, and he had a feed store. In North Hollywood, right off Lancashire.
Really?
Yeah, and it was the last feed
store. They might have been like hanging out at the Palomino or something back
then.
They
hung
out
with Roy Rogers.
Really?
Yeah, because it was the last feed store that you could ride your horse up to.
Right, okay.
And they'd ride down.
It's funny, aqueduct. That's an element of like, you know, Los Angeles life that is pushed further to the margins, but really right. Was like a pretty central part of life here way back when.
Yes.
You know, it was like a. Like a equestrian town.
Yes, it was. Yeah. And it was all orange groves
sure.
And it was all farming and there's so much country music here.
Yeah.
We forget about it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. I mean, even at Washington State, I mean, that's in that, like, she wasn't from there, but I think in that where Loretta Lynn got her start and, you know, like I said, Don Rich was from there. I mean, it's funny that like the West Coast, you know, it's got that. We think of the Bakersfield sound as like the central point of it all, but like, but there was in every little town had its scene and had its barn dances and its honky tonks and all that
right.
stuff.
Well, and I get so much shit for, you know, walking around with a cowboy hat on in Los Angeles and all these scenester bars. They're like,
right.
Like every guy wants to wear my hat. You know, that's good.
That is a
line.
That is a good hat. That is a good
hat. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. But they forget. I'm like, they go, where are you from? Are you from Texas? And I'm like, no, I'm from America.
Right.
Is that okay?
Yeah, right. Well, people forget, man, this was the Wild West out here, man.
Sure was.
This is where cowboy hats, people weren't wearing cowboy hats in the, you know, Savannah, Georgia or whatever. They were wearing them out west.
That's right. Yeah. Anywhere where the sun was intense.
Right.
You had, you know, and I grew up with horses and I'm a terrible rider, but my middle sister was... Like, she should have been Olympic level. She was, like, a barrel racer.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like in the rodeo?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so we grew up doing that, you know.
That sounds dangerous.
Taking care of horses. Yeah, it actually, well, horseback riding is one of the most dangerous sports.
Yeah, sure.
Next to hockey, they say.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Right.
It's supposed to be, like, on the top.
Yeah, don't they say it's not, like, if you're going to get thrown from your horse, it's when?
It is. And I got thrown off a horse when I was like, I was about 8 or 9. My horse was Palomino.
Like, that's the end of my horse riding career.
And actually, yeah, I was like, fuck this. I want to ride skateboards.
right. Which is also dangerous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but for whatever reason, I felt more comfortable on a skateboard than
right,
I did
sure.
on a horse.
It's something about, being on a big old animal like that. It's a little nerve-wracking if you don't do it a lot.
Right.
Well, I had to jump off a horse one time in a photo shoot that started to like gallop
he spooked.
Away. Yeah. It was crazy.
But yeah, they take off. If you don't own... you don't own it, like,
right.
Yeah, if you're not the alpha, they know right away.
I was definitely not the alpha.
That's well, because, for sure. Yeah, I know. It's like, you know, it's like, I love animals. I'm like, oh no, you know, I'm too soft.
Yeah. So, okay, so you grew up in Washington. Why, with the kind of music that you do, why did you choose to come down to LA and settle down here and be a part of this scene instead of like some of the areas like, you know, whatever, East Nashville or Austin, places that are a little more associated, you know, in
with
people's
country,
minds with,
of course. I mean, I probably should have done that, but I got my first deal when I was in high school, and
really?
It was down here, yeah. So, I mean, I had to move, or I wasn't allowed to move to LA yet, so I had to do, I moved to San Francisco with my oldest sister, and, because my mom was all right with that.
Right.
And then I just commuted down to Los Angeles like every other weekend.
Right.
And the label down here was, I just saw Sam Outlaw's record over there.
Yeah, my vinyl collection is growing over there.
Well, anyways, sorry, I'm so ADD. So anyways, I moved down here just because I got a record deal. Okay. And I was always trying to like make country records. And they always wanted me to be Sheryl Crow.
Ah, right.
So I come in with like country songs, and they're like, "Okay, well, we're gonna straighten this out."
Now, did you make any records? Or is your latest one is that your first record? Because I know that there was a period where you had gotten a record deal or whatever when you were younger. But did you wind up releasing anything back then?
Yes, I did. I mean,
because I couldn't find that on Spotify. That's why I asked.
Well, yeah, it's true. I mean, actually, I don't think the record's even on iTunes.
Oh, okay.
Just because the label's probably struggling or something.
Right, right.
And maybe there's bad blood. I hope not.
Right.
I mean, I love those folks. Like, right. They helped me out so much.
But so there was their tension, like you wanted to do one thing and they wanted you to be something else.
I'm sure maybe that was part of it, right. But it actually was the climate of the business at that time.
Right.
Like, LimeWire came out right around there, and everyone was pirating the music. And it was about, so what, it was like around 2008, and like when music, well, the business changed course,
sure,
like so drastically, right?
Yeah.
And they didn't know how to like change with the market.
Right. Took them a while.
Yeah.
To adapt.
So I just got in a holding pattern.
Right.
And I, you know, I felt bad for them. They were like, I don't know what to do with y'all. Like, you know, record's great, but we're struggling. And they were a movie company. So then they were like, we have to concentrate on that to make, you know,
right,
make
sure,
bills.
Yeah.
And keep the lights on.
Well, let's back up a little bit before that. I mean, okay, so you said your mom was always singing, and you had your great-grandparents were musicians.
Right.
But what was it for you when you were a kid that got you into music?
Well,
was it a family thing?
Yeah.
Or was it? It was.
Yeah, it was okay. Both parents.
Okay.
In fact.
Because your dad was a musician, right?
Yeah. He was a singer-songwriter. And really, my parents are both just like songwriters. Like, nobody had like mad chops or anything.
Right.
But they know how to sing, like, you know, and have their own tone.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
And lyrics, just like, I grew up talking about lyrics and poetry.
Right. Really?
Yeah. Just mainly.
So that was
mom.
A focus from an early age for you?
Yeah, my dad, like, growing up with us kids, he was always making rhymes, and it was a fun thing.
Right.
You know, like, we'd ride down the road, and he'd be like, you know, spout off something funny.
Right.
Basically, like, write a song on the spot.
Like, how old were you when you first started playing and trying to write songs yourself?
You know, I started writing when I was, like, 4 or 5.
Really?
Just because that was, you know.
You were just playing the family game.
Yeah, it
just
was a game.
Rhymes,
and it was,
right?
It was
yeah.
Very fun, actually. So, my first song I ever wrote, and I can't believe I even remember this, but it's because a boy in school was being mean to me.
Mm-hmm.
And he was throwing rocks at me. So my first song was Don't Throw Rocks at Me.
That's a good tune.
So cheesy.
You could rework that now a little bit. Like, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, just because, no, it was great, actually. It was a really fun, it was always like a challenge. They'd be like, you know, write about this. Or can you, you know, they'd start singing something. And then you had to get in. I mean, I didn't sing so much. I really was pretty shy.
Right.
But, like, my middle sister was an amazing singer. And,
really?
Yeah, and everyone was really outgoing.
So you guys were all playing music together, like, the family?
We sang together. Because I grew up with,
you know, all my brothers played guitar, too, but we sat around, like, to the campfire singing songs together. It just never happened in my family. And I look back on that and I go, why the fuck didn't we? You know?
Yeah, right.
I feel like I missed something. I love when I hear that, you know, that people, you know, people's experience that did have that, you know?
Yeah, no, my dad was always trying to make us sing. Like, there's this...
I try to push that on my kids. They won't deal with me. They totally won't. I'm waiting for them to come around.
You're not cool, Dad.
You're going to regret this. Yeah, it's funny. It's no matter what your job is, you're not cool to your kids. Yeah, that's an absolute. So when did you actually start playing out and gigging, playing bands and stuff?
Yeah, I started gigging when I was, I started doing coffee house gigs when I was 12.
Okay.
And then that, like, you know, escalated to playing bars when I was 14, 15 in Tacoma, Washington.
Oh, okay, so that's where you were. That's where you grew up, was in Tacoma? That's the part of Washington you were in?
Well, that was the nearest, like, big town.
Right.
Not city. I won't even call it Tacoma City. But I grew up on a little island, and then, you know, you commute to town.
Oh, okay.
So that's where the bars were at.
Sure.
And where society was at.
Right.
The island is pretty quiet.
And so wow. So you, if you're gigging at 14, 15, you got a record deal by 17. That's like, you know, that's pretty fast.
It was fast for me, yeah. And like, you know, my family kind of had a tumultuous, you know, relationship with my folks, and my mother's mother passed away, and so I'd like. Man, started writing songs really for real when I was 14 because, I don't know, I just felt like very moved and it was from my mother because she fell into like deep depression. Yeah, so I started writing for my mom.
Interesting. I mean, cause writing is like, you know, it's kind of therapy in its way.
Exactly. Well, and I felt like, when you write, you actually have power over life.
Right.
It made you know, pain, like, worth it. Yeah.
So, okay, so you got your record deal and you moved down to San Francisco. When did you actually come down here?
I came to Los Angeles when I was 20. I don't know what year that was. To be honest, I really suck at math.
Right.
But, yeah, so I came when I was 20. I came down, I was like, hey, this deal, like, got this record, I, you know, kind of want to get out of it, and the label was so cool, and they were so helpful, they were like, yeah, you go do you, so they helped me out, and then I got another deal with a band I was working with, I got into a harmony group, brother and sister duo, and beautiful, like, those guys know fucking harmonies in and out.
Really?
Yeah.
Anybody I would know, like anybody that's still playing around?
I don't know if they play out. It was just a band that we made up. It's called American Bloomers.
Okay.
And it was, you know, at the time, it was a trendy name.
It seems like right now, maybe it's just because I've been kind of immersed in that. Like, I interviewed Sam Outlaw recently. I'm interviewing you. I was just on tour with my friend Brian Whelan, who I know that you know. But it seems like the LA sort of Americana world is getting more attention now. But what was it like when you first moved here? Was it as much of a
cared.
thing?
Well, I think it was just a smaller audience.
Right. Because that would have been well after the sort of like, you know, the heyday of like the, you know, the 80s scene when it was really hopping here.
Yeah.
And then there was even like kind of a 90s moment where things were kind of happening. But like, you know, but like when did the whole like Grand Ole Echo and that whole sort of East Side thing sort of kick up?
You know, that's funny.
I feel like didn't we meet at a show once at the Echo a while ago? Did we not play together?
Yeah, that rock and roll tribute.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. So when did that all start to kick up?
Well, that started and everything is Ben Riddell in this town for country. You know, he's from Texas and that guy knows country through and through and he believed in it. And so there was this thing called Rancho Los Angeles, and it was over at the Lava Lounge.
Okay.
And Lucinda used to come over and sing, and we did a couple gigs with Ryan Bingham.
Okay.
Yeah, he was like getting, you know, he was taking off.
Yeah, sure.
Mark Ford was helping out. It was really beautiful. But yeah, it was such a small scene. Like no one really cared.
Well, it's definitely like fun. It's an insular scene. I mean, I noticed because I was watching some live footage of you on YouTube.
Oh, no.
No, it was great. It was great. No, it's good. But I noticed a couple of the guys playing with you are guys that I recognize from playing with Brian Whelan recently.
Oh,
like,
really?
I was just on tour with Brian.
Brian Whelan is
he's
amazing.
He's so good.
He's so good. Yeah. Yeah, and he got that voice.
But it seems like there's
too.
a lot of the he's got that voice, yeah,
oh,
for sure.
Oh god.
But it seems like a lot of the folks within the sort of like LA, West Coast, Americana world, everybody knows each other. Everybody's playing with each other.
Yeah.
That's sort of my impression of
it. Coming
I'm like
together.
I'm a little removed from it, you know what I mean? Like I'm friends with a lot of those
folks,
but I don't live over there. I'm too old. I got kids. Like I'm not going out every night, you know what I mean? But that's my impression of it. I'm wondering what you know, the reality of it is, I guess, for you.
Well, I mean, I'm blessed to like really be a part of that scene now,
right,
with the Grand Ole Echo and that. So that developed, you know, right after doing all that Rancho Los Angeles stuff. Ben and I can't remember if this gal, and I can't remember her name. Gosh, I mean, I'm fired. But Ben started the Grand Ole Echo with this gal, of which I can't remember her name. Like a total lame-o. I'd love to give credit where it's due. You know what I mean? But yeah, they started that every Sunday,
right,
at the Echo.
Yeah.
And I love that they called it the Grand Ole Echo. My friends used to be like, hey, you should go play. They're doing country every Sunday at the Echo. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, that sounds cool. You know, a couple years later, then came friends with Ben Riddell, and he was like, he actually really helped me, and he's still like my, you know, a champion for me.
He's a sweetheart. I like that guy. Yeah.
He's my favorite musician in this town.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, right on.
Yeah. I mean, besides all the famous folks. But
big props to Ben.
Ben Riddell, love you.
So of course, there's, you know, like I said, I was reading up on you, and there's that period post-record deal where you got into some trouble with the law and spent a little time incarcerated. And I'm curious, you know, what that experience was like for you, and you know, in sort of in the context of in society now, we have like a, you know, this sort of obsession with prison and prison life and reality shows. We do, yeah, focused
well,
on
lock up,
and there's
yeah.
all, exactly all that yeah. sort of stuff and people. It's like, you know, it's like prison.
All the docs and all the all,
right,
yeah,
so all that stuff about it, and like, you know, my idea of going, like, I've never spent any time incarcerated. Like my idea would be, I'd be in there fighting for my life every single day.
Oh,
like,
men have it so much harder.
Okay, so I'm curious what the experience was for you. You know, what did you spend your time in there doing? Were you writing songs? Were you working on your craft? Keeping your head down, staying out of trouble?
Yes, actually, all the above.
Okay,
and you're pretty right on the money. Yeah, you got to kind of, well, you have to keep your head down because I didn't go to prison. I was in jail for 8 months fighting a case of which they would have loved to send me to prison.
Okay. And what were the details around the case? Something involving like robbing a drug dealer or something like that, which I thought was interesting because I would think that a drug dealer would be somebody good to rob because maybe they wouldn't report it because they're doing something illegal.
Yeah, but you know, it was, no judgment on this person at all. Like, you know, I got into drugs, I got into pills and all that.
Right.
And it escalates, you know?
Sure.
But she was like kind of well to do. And then, you know, she had, her stepdad was like an attorney or something. So she was just mad. I understood. And, you know, held her up, no weapons or anything, but
right.
You know, I had a gang member with me. So like that's why they went, you know, came down so hard on me in court. Cause
like a premeditated thing.
Well, in Santa Monica, they kind of made it their mission to get rid of gangs, right? Santa Monica and Venice.
Right. Sure.
And, so I just, you know, wrong place. Well, no, not wrong place, wrong time. I chose to do what I did.
Sure.
But yeah, as far as the level of prosecution, it was probably maybe over the top because of that.
Right.
Yeah.
So you were in jail while your case was working its way through court, is
correct.
That right?
Correct. Okay. Yes.
And how did you wind up not going to prison then out of that?
I was blessed. My stepmother helped, and she, you know, said that I needed an attorney, so she helped, and my mom split. God, my mom probably borrowed money from my grandma to pay, you know, for the attorney. And that's how I was, literally saved from prison. You know, they didn't want to come down off 6 years for, like, 2 months.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, were you in going through the sort of the you know, the justice system the way that you have? Were they trying to plea deal you down?
Yeah.
Was that because I mean, isn't that like the whole
game?
It's all about getting the conviction. And,
yeah.
Right.
It is.
Like
if you go to court,
we're going to push for the maximum,
exactly.
Or sign this right now, and we'll give and you can do whatever.
How do you know about this?
Well, my mom was a probation officer, so I, you know.
Are you kidding me?
Oh yeah, my mom was a probation officer. Like my whole
childhood. I think probation officers are badasses. I think a lot of people that work in there, you know, are total badasses.
Yeah, my mom, you know, was a probation officer through the years that, you know, three strikes laws and things like that came in.
Yeah,
were
I
very
got a
frustrating
strike.
For her because she could see the absurdity of the way our justice system works. You know, my mom wasn't she wasn't like some gung-ho law enforcement person. She just kind of fell into that job. So she wasn't an idiot. She could see that it was totally counterproductive to,
to
actually, you know, like rational punishment.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure because you're lovely and your mother's probably lovely as well.
Oh, she's good. Yeah. She's retired now. She doesn't do that anymore.
I digress.
Well, anyway, so, and we don't have to talk too much about that.
I fought the case and I did not have to go to prison, thank God.
Did you come out of there with like a back pocket full of tunes though? Like, I'm ready to go get a new record deal. Let's go.
Oh, no, I came out of there depressed as shit.
Right.
I came out. Well, I mean, I had to go, my sentence was, you know, not only time served, thank God. So I took the plea.
Right.
Like you're talking about.
Right.
Because they did tell me, they're like, if you go to trial, you will lose.
Right.
And probably, you know, that was the reality.
Right, sure.
So I took the plea, and so it was, what was it? It was 8 months total. They said time served, and then I got 3 years probation, and also 6 months residential treatment. I ended up, you know, like 9 months.
Right.
Over at
this. And when was this all happening? What's the timeline here? Screw you up for touring now? Or
I can't go to Canada.
Okay.
Yeah.
But are you th- through with like probation and all that stuff. Okay, so you don't have to like check in with somebody before you go on the road or anything
not
like that.
Anymore.
Okay, okay.
It was a 3-year felony probation. Right. And I was like, no cakewalk, but but yeah, no, I'm not on probation anymore. I'm like, obviously I don't get in trouble, man. I was like, after that, I was scared to death.
Sure.
So I just didn't do that's anything.
But that's a real thing. You know, once people are in the system, it's oftentimes they stay in the system.
Well, I'm why I even talk about this.
Right.
Otherwise, I wouldn't. It's like, because I wouldn't want to shame my family's name.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, yeah,
and,
sure.
And it really does have a stigma attached to it.
Sure.
Yeah. I'm like, gosh, did drugs when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Like, kid, you know, 20 years old. Right, that's a kid.
That's a kid. That's a kid.
Yeah. So the reason that I even talk about it is it's because I really believe and I hope, I can do nothing, but I hope that we can change that system because I think it's very inefficient.
Yeah.
And I think it just like...
counterproductive.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There's not much rehabilitating.
Right.
And that.
It seems like people are coming around to getting that.
I pray.
Yeah. So, okay. So then how did you wind up getting the, you have a record deal with 40 Below, right? Is that your label now?
Yeah, I do.
How did that all come about? And tell me about making your new record.
You know what? So I did this tour and now it's become like a regular thing. I go on tour with Sam Morrow and he's a young cat. He's a great, great singer. And I don't know why I took to him. Like I mostly keep to myself, but Sam, I was like, hey, we could sing together and we could share a band and go on tour.
Mm.
And we were on tour and it was, you know, really fun. So he had this record label of 40 Below.
Right.
And so eventually I met, you know, the owner of that
label,
Eric Korn.
LA-based label, right?
Yeah, LA. Yeah. And Eric, he engineered and worked on all those like Dwight Yoakam records.
Oh, really?
Mad Dog.
Really?
Yeah, like
cool.
Totally. And for me, like that was like as a fan, I'm just like
sure.
Mad Dog Studios and Dwight Yoakam, that's LA country history.
Oh yeah. Yeah, so, big time.
Yeah, so immediately he had my attention and you know, we hit it off and I was like, I have this record, like I kept going, I called it, I was like nickel and diamond.
Yeah.
You know, like just like
record a little bit here, record.
Yeah, go on tour, come home.
Yeah.
Go record, whatever. And working with this rad cat, this guy, Drew Allsbrook.
Hmm.
And he's just a badass bass player.
Okay.
And I took him on tour and I found him in the back of my van reading circuitry books. And he was like, I went to Berklee School of Music. And I was like, yeah, everyone did.
Right.
Sure. Everyone's got a studio. And then I heard his shit, and he just knew how to make good tone.
Right.
Like, even with, he's got like, you know.
Did he produce your records? Because your record sounds great.
Well, we produced it together.
Yeah, right on.
Well, because I'm awful to work with. No. Drew is amazing because he's very good working with women.
Yeah.
And I'm also very, like, just, I don't know. I'm very committed to, and I know what sound should be.
Well, you have a vision for your art. I think people call that difficult.
Right.
But is it? You know what I mean? Why shouldn't you have a strong opinion about your work, you know?
Yeah, I got a temper too.
Well, we're all irrational musicians. If we were like well-adjusted people, we wouldn't be fucking doing this for a living, you know what I mean?
Right. Well, it's like, yeah, why do you even want to write songs or like play music? It's like, because there just might be emotional pain.
I think you have to be a little nuts to do this, you know?
So nuts.
Yeah.
So nuts. So made that record with Drew, and then I was like, I don't really even know what to do with this.
Record's called Felony Blues, right?
Yeah, that's okay. Right. And Eric came along. He's like, I would love to put this record out. And that got like, he doesn't put records out that he's not involved in.
Mm.
And we're, you know, mixing it and And mixing, gosh, is a whole nother, like, whole nother level that I actually learned so much about, finally.
Yeah.
All these years make music, mixing is so crazy.
Yeah.
So Eric remixed my record, and it just shined. It came together finally.
Yeah. And when did it come out?
It came out on February 24th.
Right.
So just a couple months back.
Have you been touring and hit it hard?
Yeah,
I mean, it seems like you're getting a lot of attention. I feel like yours is one of the names that I see, you know, a lot. Oh, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I try to hide out as much as I can.
That's the opposite of what you're supposed to do when you're marketing a record. Come on.
No, I'm teasing. Well, I'm so like grateful and I'm blessed that like people want me to play for them. And yeah, so it just kind of came together. Like I got an agent, and I got a great manager, Adam Barnes. I love you.
Nice.
Yeah, and he manages Shooter, and Shooter and Missy have been like so supportive. Like they'd show up to my shows, and that's like my hero, son. Shooter Jennings. Like those records are amazing.
Sure.
Yeah, he is a rebel.
Yeah?
Right, in the blood.
I mean, I've actually never met Shooter. I would love to interview him for the show. That's one of those ones on my list of like, why haven't I gotten this guy yet?
Because he's shy as shit.
I actually saw him at a gig not too long ago, and I was like, I should go introduce myself and ask him if I could interview him. I was like, you know what, he's watching a show. I don't want to bug that guy.
Oh, yeah, and that guy ain't got no ego.
Oh, really? He's a good guy?
He's, like, so pure. His energy and...
Nice.
The way, you know, they live, they're just nice people. They're just about family.
One of these days. I'm going to get them. I'm going to get you. Shoot.
Right.
Hey, do you want to play a song from your record?
Yeah, sure. What do you want me to play?
Whatever you want. I'm going to turn this around.
Cool. And you can... edit out blank space.
Are you allowed?
Singer, yes. Okay. Yeah, I am. Actually, do you have cable?
I do.
A cable.
Right here, boom. It's all techno and newfangled, even.
Yeah, well, this is the cheat. This is a cheater, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's what they call it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, cable's a cheater.
Oh yeah, because pretty much makes everything sound great. That's why I love a capo. You put a capo on your guitar, you're like, whoa, these three chords sound amazing.
And you're a real guitar player. Like I really like all I do is play chords.
Yeah, right. It's like, that's all you gotta do.
Yeah, and just fit it in the right, you know.
Right.
Ideally, there's a melody
in there somewhere. If you wanna.
All right, then I gotta play a jail song for you. That's it.
Do you mind if I snap a picture of you while you're playing?
Oh, not at all. Yeah,
on the
interweb? Of course, yeah. I ain't got no makeup on, but.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't have to.
Oh no, I'm okay with it. Okay. Like, shoot, I wear a hat so it covers up my eyes. It'll cover up any non-make. Well, I was trying to give my skin a break. I was gonna play this song called Your Lovin' Saves Me.
Alright.
And that's one that, cause I keep looking at Sam Outlaw over there, like,
nice.
This beautiful male model.
I know. Love that shirt. He's
so hot right now. Sam, I love you. Yeah. No, he's a sweetheart. He's a total sweetheart and a badass. So he sang on this track, and I'll play it best I can in the morning. So, we go. Here we go. Again. closer than we've ever been. Will you lead me through the night? I can almost see the light to see you two-step gliding across the floor, chasing that high hat door to door. Maybe a little desert rock and roll to feed my Yankee heart and Southern soul. There ain't no borders, there ain't no boundaries. Good, good people all around me. Heart is concrete, soft is gravy. Jesus is Cuba, your loving saves me. Oh Lord, I hope I don't forget the ones I owe the greatest debt. See you standing there tonight, open arms and burning bright to see you two-step gliding across the floor, chasing that high hat door to door. Maybe a little jazz or rock and roll to feed my Yankee heart and Southern soul. Ain't no borders, there ain't no boundaries. Good, good people all around me. Heart is concrete, soft as gravy. Jesus is Cuba, your loving saves me. Oh, it saves me. Your loving saves me. Your loving saves me. Sorry, that's the Morning Stone version.
Alright, that was Jamie Wyatt doing a wonderful acoustic version of Your Loving Saves Me off her album Felony Blues. Make sure you get on over to jamiewyatt.com. Check out what's going on with her. I know she's got some tour dates coming up in May and June. You can also find her on the Twitter at Jamie Wyatt Music. So get out there and support your local scene, people. And when you're doing that, make sure you support my local scene, bitches. It's West Coast Town. It's in stores. It's available. You can stream it. You can buy it on the iTunes. And when you're buying it on the iTunes, you can check out all the old episodes of Walking the Floor. Because that's where they live. All right, that's it for this week. I love you. Adios, amigos.